From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman, in for Brian Mackey this week. Water is an essential part of life, and we use it in all sorts of ways, staying hydrated, cooling off, cooking, gardening, agriculture, you name it. And these days, we've become pretty comfortable with potable water being available right from the tap, and that's thanks to modern water treatment, which cleans and filters out things that can potentially be harmful. But sometimes things can slip through the cracks or systems simply become too overwhelmed. And that was the case in Mattoon earlier this month. The city and the surrounding area recently dealt with an algae bloom that contaminated the drinking water. The crisis has fortunately subsided, but throughout the month of July, people were forced to rely on bottled water. And events like the popular Bagel Fest also had to make some adjustments. So during the hour today, we're going to talk about the dangers of algae blooms and also take a look at the quality of drinking water across the state. But first, we're going to look at how the situation in Mattoon unfolded and how the city responded, what it's learning from dealing with this recent situation. Joining us now to talk more about all of this is Dave Clark. He's Public Works Director for the City of Mattoon and the City Engineer. Dave, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you, Christine.
Listeners, we invite you to join the conversation. Our number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. If you've ever been affected by an algae bloom or if you have questions about how these situations are handled, 800-222-9455. So, Dave, I want to start by talking about where Mattoon residents get their drinking water from. We're a statewide show, so some of our listeners, perhaps many of our listeners, may not be familiar with your area.
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, Mattoon is right along I-57, just about 45 minutes south of Champaign. All our water comes from surface lakes that we have. One of those is Lake Paradise, and then the other alternate that we have is Lake Mattoon. So we pull all of our water out of those two lakes.
And can you talk about, you know, under normal conditions, how is the water there treated before it's sent out to residents to use in their homes?
Well, I mean, the treatment process doesn't change too much other than the amounts of chemicals and stuff that we're using at certain times, depending on what our test results show. And we're testing the water daily for different things. And as far as the tests for the algae bloom, those are mainly done by the IEPA. We have a strip test, so to speak, that we can use to determine if it's above 1.0 or below 1.0. But after that, to get down to the levels that the IEPA look at in terms of whether it's drinkable or not, we need to send those samples to them. And that office is in Springfield where they do that testing. So at that point, you know, they'll come out starting usually in the spring sometime. They take samples from our lakes. They run the analysis of all the algae bloom and other things that we may have in the lake. And I might also say at this point, too, it's just this isn't something that just happened like in May or June or July. I mean, this is something that we have, and I think probably almost every municipality that pulls off a surface lake like we do has to deal with algae blooms throughout the year, depending on the year. And we monitor this, and we're usually able to keep it under control with our treatments that we do.
And
I was going to say, as far as what we did, the IEPA came out, tested our raw water out of the lake in May, about the middle of May. Everything there was just fine. There was basically what they call a non-detect at the plant. So that means it's under that 0.2. And then they came again in June. I think it was June the 10th, tested again. And that finished water was under it. It was a non-detect. At that point also, it was like a 0.1. So it was, much below the 0.3. And then at the end of June, we started seeing more of an algae bloom on the lake. You could see the bloom floating around in the water. And so we contacted them on the 25th, and they returned on the 26th and took some more samples. And at that point in time, the raw lake water was now over a 5, where before it was only like a 0.3
Wow.
or a 3.0 or something in those ranges. And so we could see that that was going up. They tested then the finished tap water that we send out of the plant to the homes and businesses, and that was at a 0.2 to 4. So again, it's under the limits that the IEPA has set out there. And they again tested that July 1st. We received those results on July 2nd. And again, it's still under the 0.3.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea what caused the bloom to expand so quickly between May and like end of June?
It didn't really just explode on us until like July 9th when they came and took another test. And that's where it went above the 0.3.
Okay.
There's just a lot of different things that go into this. We've had a lot of heat, a lot of temperature, but a lot of sunshine. That helps algae grow and blossom. We have nutrients that come off of fields, out of septic tanks, whatever, that run into our streams and rivers and lakes. That's something everybody's going to be dealing with, no matter where you're at in the state.
Yeah. So the city issued do not drink orders right around that July. Was it July 9th?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And then how were the decisions made to issue that first order and then the subsequent one that came after that first one had been lifted? Maybe can you walk us through that timeline from July 9th?
Yeah. Well, right away when we got the test results back from the IAPA that showed that we were a 0.35, we convened our incident management team here, which included myself, the police department, the fire department, community development, and anybody else that we could find at that point to say, okay, we take our emergency action plan and we start putting it into use here. And it was a team effort there to kind of come up with what we needed to do. We talked with the IEPA. We were discussing things with the Coles County Public Health Department. We were talking with IEMA and the Coles County management system here, and it just trying to get the best information we could and get the information as accurate as possible to put out to the public. And it took a little while to get some of the answers, talking with the IEPA to get their guidance on some of these things. And then we put that out on July 10th, when that went out, about 5-6 o'clock at night. So
let me take a moment to reintroduce our guest. I'm speaking with Dave Clark. He's Public Works Director and City Engineer for the City of Mattoon. I want to play some audio right now provided by my Illinois Public Media colleague, Jim Meadows. He spoke with Chris Walden, a resident of Mattoon who runs Big Al Shakeups. And here's what Chris had to say about the water disruption to his home and business, specifically when the second Do Not Drink order was issued. And this happened amid the Bagel Fest event that was taking place at that time.
So it's not just our stand, but it's also our shop where we store everything, and then also, our house too, as far as showering and water and everything.
Mm-hmm. How's that been for the past week? I mean, off and on with this.
It's been a struggle, we've been sanitizing the machine. As a matter of fact, some of our machines have all been sanitized, and then of course they put the order back in. So everything we did was for naught now. So we're going to have to re-sanitize everything, that we're not using right now.
I'm speaking with Dave Clark, Public Works Director at the City of Mattoon. Dave, can you tell us a little bit more about Bagel Fest, and specifically, did that make it particularly challenging to have, not that there's ever a good time to issue a do not drink order, but how did the community respond to, especially around that event?
Yeah, it was challenging having that going on or going to be happening real soon. And so, that's the other thing. We started mobilizing in terms of being how are we going to get water to people? Can we get tankers, bottled water, whatever? The Rural King, which is headquarters here in Mattoon, were very gracious about providing water, bottled water and stuff. Walmart was the same way. There was people with tankers that we could load up. Illinois American Water helped supply some water. We got water from Tuscola and other communities around here. I can't probably name them all. But I do think, you know, a lot of people just came together and saw that there was a need, and we're helping with that. And it did disrupt a lot of people. I mean, it was hard, I think, especially on restaurants and stuff like that that needed to provide water for their people and keep their stores open. But, you know, a lot of them were very resilient in a lot of ways, you know, using paper plates and forks and, you know, paper cups. And that way they didn't have to worry about washing the plates and things like that. So I do, you know, the community was really helpful, not only helping volunteer to hand out water, because that was another undertaking, just to get the water to people. And, you know, people in the community, the businesses here helped with that a lot. Even, you know, outside of the community, there's people from Champaign that came down. There was the mayor and Arcola brought a group in to help. People from down around Effingham come up and help. So it really was a regional effort to help us make sure people had water that they could drink. And I noticed what he talked about was showering and stuff like that. And that was kind of a misconception right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I mean, the order we put out didn't say anything about that. It talked about, you know, actually drinking the water. You know, as far as showering, washing your clothes, washing your hair, things like that, you could do that. It's just you could not ingest the water. So that was a little bit of a misconception, and that took a while to get through that, too.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of opportunity for misunderstandings or spread of misinformation during a time when people are not sure what's going on or how they're supposed to respond. Are there lessons that the city took away from this most recent algae bloom, or any changes that the city of Mattoon is looking to make in the future, perhaps towards prevention of these types of things in the lakes?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully you always learn some lessons from incidents like this that you can do better. I think the group that came together here, to kind of the incident management team, did an excellent job in trying to get the word out and come up with ways to combat this. But as far as things that we're looking at for the future, I mean, like I said, we've had this that we monitored for years, and I think almost every community. I know Vienna down south had this last fall. Bloomington's been dealing with this, not as bad as what we've had, but, you know, they're all the communities with lakes that they use to provide water with are probably going to be dealing with this. And so, you know, we're looking at things that maybe be a little more proactive in the future, although, you know, we know that we're monitoring this and we're looking at it and how this just exploded almost overnight, it seemed like. And a lot of that could be due just to the fact that it's been warmer this year. We got a lot of sunshine. We're getting rains every other day, it seemed like. And it was just a right combination of a lot of things that came together that allowed this bloom to just explode on us. But, you know, we're looking at things that maybe we can do different treatments in the plant in different manners. We're looking at aeration systems that maybe we could put into the lake that might help combat this. And we already have a contract out for doing spraying. It's just right now this is not the best time of year to spray algaecides and because it takes out the dissolved oxygen in the water, which then that could harm fish and other habitat.
Hmm.
So we're being very careful with that. We were out there testing it this week, had hoped to be able to spray, but we're probably now going to be waiting till next week before we try again.
In just about 30 seconds. So things are back to normal in Mattoon for the most part as of right now, or a couple weeks since that
right
final
now,
order was lifted.
Yeah, right now we're back. And we test this now every Monday and Thursday. Those tests are sampled and taken over to Springfield, and they give us the results in the afternoon. So we'll be sending samples tomorrow, getting them tested and have results. And we've been in the no detect category for many days now.
And is there a way that the people in the public who have questions about this, can they find out about the status of the water on your website or anything like that?
Yeah, we're periodically, after every testing, we're putting out information as to what our test results were. any news and things we have on our website. We're using social media and different things like that to kind of get that word out there. So yeah, anytime we have a test, we get a result, we're publishing that.
Dave Clark is the Public Works Director and City Engineer for the City of Mattoon. Dave, thank you so much for joining us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
We'll be continuing our discussion on algal blooms and water quality till the top of the hour, and we're coming up on a short break. But if you'd like to join our conversation, if you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. I'm Christine Herman. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.
Support for the 21st Show comes from listeners like you and the Des Moines Art Center, presenting Firlet Baez, featuring colorful, large-scale works engaging history and legacy. On view through September 21st. Details at DesMoinesArtsCenter.org.
This is the 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman in for Brian Mackey. Throughout the hour today, we're talking about algae blooms and considering the state of drinking water across Illinois. We just heard from Dave Clark, Public Works Director with the City of Mattoon, talking about the algae bloom that recently affected the area there. And now we turn to talk about the dangers of algal blooms themselves, what to know about them, and how we can keep our water supply safe. I'm joined in studio by Amy Weckel. She's Assistant Director of the Illinois Water Resources Center, which works with scientists, water professionals, and communities to address water resource challenges. She's also the co-lead of the Algal Bloom Action Team, so kind of the perfect guest for today's show. Amy, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Again, listeners, you can join the conversation. Our number is 800-222-9455. Do you have any questions about algal blooms? Have you ever been affected by one in your area? 800-222-9455. So, Amy, let's just step back and talk big picture. What exactly is an algae bloom or an algal bloom?
Sure. So algae itself isn't harmful. You'll often find it on the surface of lakes and ponds. It's not a plant, but it has similar characteristics to plants. It produces energy and oxygen through photosynthesis, and it serves as a primary food source for other organisms like fish and turtles. And algal blooms are rapid growths of algae, and they occur naturally, and they're harmless. Harmful algal blooms are, there's actually a group of bacteria instead that can mimic algal blooms, and the group most commonly encountered are called cyanobacteria.
And confusingly, they're called blue-green algae, right?
Yes.
But they're not algae.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Cyanobacteria.
Yes.
Okay.
So these bacteria are also common in nature, and they're actually thought to be the oldest photosynthetic organisms on Earth. But they can produce blooms also under the right environmental conditions, like Dave mentioned, warm water temperatures, proper sunlight, and calm conditions. Their blooms mimic the characteristics of regular algae blooms, but they can also look like paint slicks or grass-like clippings on the water or even scum floating on the water.
So there are visual differences you would notice, or is it like to the untrained eye, it kind of all looks the same, the harmful ones and then the not harmful ones?
Right. So even to a professional, it's very difficult to distinguish visually the difference.
So to really know, there's a certain amount of testing that has to be done to the water, is that right?
Yeah, so the cyanobacterial blooms become harmful when they produce toxins. And so the presence of a bloom doesn't mean that it's harmful in general.
Okay.
Or that there's even toxins present. The only way to be certain is to test the water. And the testing that Dave mentioned by the IEPA tests the level of the toxins in the water.
Okay. Is this something that you have to be a professional to be able to test? Or if you live in an area where there are ponds and maybe your dog's getting curious about drinking the water and you're not sure if it's safe, are there at-home tests that people can do?
Not that I'm aware of,
okay.
Not that are reliable.
Sure.
They're expensive and should be done by a professional.
Okay. Can I ask, in what types of bodies of water do algal blooms typically form? And I don't know if there's a different answer for the harmful blooms versus the ones that are harmless.
They can be in any type of water, surface water. They can be in salt water, fresh water, and any type of water, really.
Okay. And let's talk about the toxin that you mentioned. So the cyanobacteria, they proliferate in the water under the right conditions, and then they produce a toxin. It's microcystin, is that right?
They produce, yeah, there's different types of toxins.
Oh, there's different types. Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you talk about these toxins and I guess, what should we know about them?
Yeah, so the toxins themselves are produced by the bacteria, and they can be held within the bacteria and released when the bacteria dies, or they can be released while the bloom is occurring. So exposure to the toxins can cause skin irritation, and they can affect the liver and nervous system, and they're some of the most toxic substances known. They can persist in the water body even after the bloom has dissipated visually, and they can cause death within minutes or hours. Symptoms can depend on the type of exposure and range from skin irritation, diarrhea, vomiting, disorientation, seizures. Animals that drink the water, consume the water, can begin to stagger and have difficulty breathing. And also, symptoms may not be apparent until lethal amounts have been ingested.
Oh my, okay. And we're talking about ingestion. What about other interactions with the water, whether you're swimming in it or, I don't know, using it to wash your dishes or something?
Yeah, so they persist. The toxins persist, and it's hard to get rid of them. So imagine your dog goes out and plays in a pond and comes back in, and then maybe it wasn't playing, you know, in the water or drinking the water itself, but then it begins to lick its fur and clean itself. It could be ingesting toxins that way. So it's important that you rinse your animals. There's no way, like if you boil water, it concentrates the toxin, so that doesn't prevent exposure to it,
okay,
or ingestion, or
yeah,
anything like that.
Because people might hear cyanobacteria and be like, oh, I should just kill the bacteria and then it'll be safe. But the bacteria are producing toxins, which are chemicals, which are not removed by the process of boiling.
Correct.
Okay. So what about filters, filtration? Are there other options? And I mean, I guess if there's a do not drink order issued, then you wouldn't be drinking the water and you shouldn't try filtering it yourself. But mm-hmm. if people have concerns about impacts to their water sources, what should they know about ways to keep themselves safe?
Yeah, so treating Ahab is really only a temporary fix. So prevention itself is critical. Minimizing the application of nutrients, especially phosphorus near water bodies, is the best way to prevent it. In terms of any kind of land management action to prevent or mitigate the presence of algae or cyanobacteria, like herbicides or algicides or anything like that, or even aeration, typically require a permit from the state by a regulatory agency, and chemicals can be added, but only by a state-certified applicator.
Okay. So you mentioned something there that I wanted to circle back to. And now I've completely lost my thought. I'm so sorry. But I'll just take a moment to reintroduce my guest today. We're speaking with Amy Weckel. She's Assistant Director of the Illinois Water Resources Center. We're talking about algae blooms and how they can be dangerous. And this comes after the city of Mattoon dealt with an algae bloom earlier this month, resulting in all of their water becoming undrinkable for a time. So I suppose people who have been affected by a recent algae bloom that led to a do not drink order, what are things they should perhaps do as a precaution if they had their water running through their filters to get the water out of the refrigerator? Should those filters be replaced? What are other things that should be done as a precaution to make sure that the danger is removed?
Yeah, I think replacing the filters is a good first step. And in general, if you feel that you may have been exposed to an algae bloom, or your animals, livestock, pets have been exposed, IDPH has a form that you can fill out, and the IEPA also has an online form where you can report this, and they track the incidents on a HABS dashboard online. So if you're going to visit a water body for a vacation or something, you can see if there's been a recent occurrence.
Given just the changes to climate and the, you know, greater incidence of warmer weather, hotter weather, is this a concern that we have going forward? Like, is it a concern that it'll become more frequent or more prominent or more dangerous in terms of algal blooms?
Yes, for sure. You know, general climate predictions are indicating that warmer temperatures and increases in rainfall they're predicted. And when coupled with the current agricultural practices that erode the soil and reduce nutrient retention, it's very likely that these things, you know, the nutrients will continue to be washed into the water bodies, which increase the likelihood that blooms will occur and then that those blooms will become harmful.
Yeah. As we move toward wrapping up our conversation, let's just talk about prevention for the last bit here. So you mentioned nutrient runoff is a contributor to algal blooms, phosphates, erosion. What are some like practical things that communities should consider taking action on if they want to reduce the chance of experiencing an algal bloom that could be harmful to their water supply?
Mm-hmm. So using, you know, submerging aquatic plants or planting heavy vegetation around water bodies to help, that will help absorb and filter the nutrients. You can possibly install an aeration system to keep the water moving and maintain oxygen levels, but that aeration system may not be practical on larger lakes. Smaller water bodies or ponds or livestock ponds might be possible. But again, you should always check with your, you know, any land management should be checked with a regulatory agency in your state.
Mm-hmm. And as I understand it, Illinois only does testing after an algae bloom has been reported or once every month. Do you think there can be more done from the state or from regulatory bodies to assist with prevention or at least early detection of an algal bloom that's forming in bodies of water?
Yeah, I think in general, informing the public is the most important. A lot of, as you mentioned, a lot of this relies on reporting by the public or lake managers. And so as part of the algal bloom action team, that's what we work to do, is to standardize the messaging around these algal blooms and ensure that the public is informed and educated on what they might look like or how to report them. And so, yeah, hopefully, I think the best way is just to inform the public and so they know what to look for.
Amy Weckel is the Assistant Director of the Illinois Water Resources Center. Amy, thank you so much for joining us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.